drug educator. I spend my life talking to people about drugs. So I have a question for you. Reflect back on your high school experience with drug educators. And please do me a favor. Point to that wall if you believe they told you 100% lies. Point to this wall if you believe they told you 100% truth. And point somewhere in the middle if you believe that it's somewhere in the middle. So please, I'm going to ask you to all vote. Drug educators, what do they do? Okay, taking the average of the room, it's about 90% lies. Okay. I'd like to reflect on your experience with sex education in high school. Now, did the sex educator tell you 100% lies, 100% truth, or somewhere in between? So please, would you please vote? Okay, it's about half and half. It's about half and half. Okay, so what we have is 90% lies from the drug educators and about half and half lies for the sex educators. That's curious. So I do drug education, and I am a guy that spends a lot of my life in front of people talking about drugs. So I usually start my presentations with an apology. And the apology is for the lies of past drug educators, including myself. Specifically, we have told three lies. We've exaggerated the harms from drugs. We've not acknowledged the benefits of drugs, and we've never examined the harms done by drug prohibition. So there is a poster on your chair. It's kind of a pink-looking poster. If you would like to see me in public breaking those three lies and actually telling the truth about drugs, you'd be more than welcome to show up. It's an open public program, and I do it every week. Every Friday, I give a talk about drugs, and I have a commitment, and my commitment is to tell the truth. And I start by asking people to challenge me. If they think that I'm lying about drugs, then we need to chat. And people do. And we have this spirited debate, and it's wonderful. So I have a fairly long gig that I do about this, but because I'm short of time, I'm going to actually summarize. Drug prohibition creates a robust illegal market which makes illicit drugs widely available, spawns significant health and social pathologies, enriches organized crime, engages our youth, and marginalizes some users, all at great expense to the taxpayer. So the process of drug prohibition, as has been in detail explored by these two wonderful people, it doesn't work at all. It is a failed social policy. So I'd like to talk about what we need to do about that. So what is the solution? In Vancouver Coastal Health, the solution started with the process of harm reduction. So we actually have a facility where we welcome people to come and inject drugs. It's called Insight. You've probably heard about it. Here is a picture of the front door. The first word on the front door is welcome. We welcome people who have often never been welcomed anywhere in their lives to a facility, and we allow them to inject drugs in our place. It is the most researched supervised injection site on the planet, and it's the most researched health service Vancouver Coastal Health has ever provided. There's been over 30 peer-reviewed journal articles looking at it. I'll give you the studies if you'd like. I have them all, but I'd like to summarize them. These are all articles that have appeared in peer-reviewed journal articles. There has been a reduction of public disorder. There was a huge fear, a drama that happened in our city when Insight was proposed. Blood on the streets was predicted. Social chaos was predicted. The battle unfolded in our city, and what we observe through the lens of evidence, exactly the opposite has occurred. We have increase in public order, or a decrease in public disorder. We have reductions in needle tearing. We have a successful management of over 1,000 overdoses. Nobody's died in any supervised injection site anywhere on the planet. We have increased use of detox programs and addiction treatment. We have reductions in violence against women. We have increase in condoms use, and overdose deaths have been averted. Those are the positive findings. There have been some negative findings, so there's no adverse changes in community drug use patterns. There's been no increases into initiation into injection drug use, and there's been no increases in drug-related crime in the neighborhood. And quite frankly, this is the most amazing one. It pays for itself. Here is a service that pays for itself. It doesn't cost the taxpayer anything to provide the service. The increased savings in the health budget pay for the process. We also have done heroin prescription in our city. It was based on the Swiss heroin trial, where they initially had close to 1,200 participants, and what they demonstrated was benefit. The subsequent study that the Swiss had, they had close to 2,000 participants. They gave intravenous drug users heroin, and what they demonstrated was benefit. It was physical health, mental health, housing, criminality, contacts with the drug scene, cocaine use dropped, unemployment dropped, and 22% of the people had chosen abstinence as a result of the process. You give people who use heroin, heroin, and they get better, is what they showed. So we had the NAOMI study, which was the North America Opiate Medication Initiative, which is where we gave out heroin in our city, and we demonstrated benefit. The blue on this graph is methadone, methadone maintenance treatment. The black is heroin, which is DAM, diacetylmorphine, which is heroin. So on the left, what you see is people stuck around. They enjoyed it. People like heroin. They don't like methadone. So people participated in the process, is what the left-hand side of this graph says. The right-hand side says they get better. And the get better was a whole range of different mental health, physical health issues. So it worked. We've done significant health interventions, and what we found is health approaches work. So because I'm actually here to talk about the next step, it's not about just health services, but fundamentally, what are our laws and how do we restructure our laws? I would like to propose we have 8 legal options. We can do free market legalization. We can do legalization focusing on the product. We can do market regulation that I'm going to talk about in a minute. We can let doctors be the gatekeepers. We could decriminalize, which means withdraw the law. We could do de facto decriminalization, which says let's pretend to withdraw the law. We could depenalize, which is basically parking ticket status, or we could do full criminalization. Now, if I took those 8 options and I stuck them on a graph, and I asked the question, what impact would this have on society? What I see on one end is full-scale prohibition, which is this stuff here. When you do full-scale prohibition, what you have is illegal market gangsters running the system. If you do the other end, which is if you legalize and promote, what we have is the models for alcohol and tobacco, and what we have is huge social problems because corporations drive the agenda. The answer is somewhere in the middle. The answer is somewhere in the middle using public health, which is what I want to talk about. But I want to talk about the left-hand side of that graph first. If we're going to design a new model, if we're going to say prohibition doesn't work, let's start again, I think that we need to start with our lessons learned from alcohol and tobacco. So specifically, here is a very elegant woman. She's decked out in jewels. She's getting out of a very fancy car. Somebody's taking her picture. The subtext says it's your ticket to a world of sophistication and style. And she's smoking a drug that, when used as directed, will kill you. Here we have muscular young rock climbers with kayaks on their back in the middle of winter with no wetsuits on. And they are promoting a drug that, when used as directed, will produce throat cancers, mouth cancers, lip cancers. Not healthy. How many here don't know what the word 420 means? Okay. 420 means it's time to smoke a joint. It's a universal slang. It's used by most countries around the planet. It's a commonly used term. 420, I believe, is a term that the Shaftesbury Beer Company actually knew what it meant when they designed this beer. This is called cross-marketing. It's taking one drug and marketing another drug to that group. Now, if this doesn't persuade you that cross-marketing exists, take a look at this one. Now, I don't know what you see on this picture, but I see a line of white powder. I think this is also cross-marketing. Now, if that doesn't persuade you that cross-marketing exists, how about this one? This contains rum triple sec and Sambuca. It's sold in Alberta liquor stores. Virtual ecstasy. So this is the process that happens when you allow large corporations to dominate. So here's just another example. Hey, BC Bud. Right. BC Bud is used to sell a caffeinated beverage. It's available in Vancouver. Here's another thing. These drinks are dressed up like candies. They're 23-ounce cans. They contain the equivalent of 4 beer and 2 cups of coffee and 60 grams of sugar. And they're aimed at kids. Four Locos. Now, what do we have here? Now, I would describe this as being a really sexy body. Dominant and in control. And she is consuming a drug that Shakespeare said increases the desire but decreases the performance. And why would you settle for a single sexy body when you can ask the question, why have just one? Polygamy Porter rules the day in Utah. Yes. So what I have just finished showing you is best described as absolute fantasies based on the simple corporate desire to increase the consumption of drugs. And they present illusions to us. Drug policies based on illusions don't work very well. We have to be based in reality. So if we're going to build a new model, we have to start with a foundation. And the foundations that I would suggest are public health and human rights. So the human rights model has been around for years. In fact, it was established in 1948, and it limits the state's ability to intrude on individuals and establishes government responsibilities. Most countries, even the ones that drag their citizens into the streets and kill them in public, support human rights. At least they pay lip service to it. We have a significant history of this in Canada, where we support it. We have our own Charter of Rights and Freedoms. From my perspective, the two weaknesses of the human rights model is they don't balance individual rights, which are important, with individual responsibilities. And when we're talking about drug using, we need to talk about individual responsibilities as well. And the human rights model doesn't fundamentally deal with health. It's not a health service, and it really is a health problem we're dealing with here. So the other foundation of a new model should be, I believe, public health. Now, if you think of the definition of public health, it's the study of the reciprocal relationship between three factors, a host, an agent, and an environment. That's the theory of public health. In this case, the host is the drug user. The agent is the drug, and the environment are our laws and policies and services, etc. So really what we're talking about here is the social determinants of health. The processes in society that surround drugs, our attitudes, our opinions, our services, and fundamentally our drug laws, which drive the whole problem that we're talking about tonight. It's really difficult to get the balance between public health and human rights done. We need more public health when it comes to alcohol and tobacco controls. We need more human rights when it comes to things like methadone programs and medical marijuana programs. So we need both, because the public health model brings the focus of population health, and the human rights model brings the user's perspective. And sometimes users tell very powerful poems and move us to tears. So I want to talk about the specific models that could be used to regulate the market for currently illegal drugs. Tool number one is what I've shown you. If there's one thing that we can learn from our history with tobacco, is if you allow a product to be branded, advertising will occur. An army of lawyers will show up in government offices and argue that what they are doing is not advertising. And it is. So on the left, we have a pre-branded cannabis. It's colorful, logoized, convenient, fits in a certain pocket, and looks a whole lot like another product we know only too well. The one on the right is a non-branded model of exactly the same drug, a very different message in our society. So we could focus on the product. We could prohibit the branding. We could focus on the design of the packaging, the amount per package, the warning labels, the registration approval of products before sales are allowed, and we could do package ingredient labeling. Why don't we have labels that announce the ingredients of tobacco? It's bizarre to me. For those folks who saw the movie The Corporation, it's a very powerful film. I'd recommend it. Corporations do not act in the interest of public health. So here's a whole lot of examples of what we would actually have to do to control corporations from stimulating our greed and desire to consume. We would also have to work with suppliers. At the end of alcohol prohibition, the existing suppliers of alcohol were allowed to participate in the new model. Suppliers range from Colombian farmers to Afghan farmers to inner city gangs in New York to small rural communities in BC. There's a lot of different suppliers. They'd all have to participate in the new model. So let's look at what we could actually do. Now, the next three slides I'm going to show you, I actually borrowed from the city of Vancouver. The drug policy department went around the city and used these three slides to explain what they were discussing at the time. But our current responses under the current criminalized regime are actually very few. If you think about what's available to us now, we can do enforcement. That really sucks. Can you read that? No, you can't. Hang on a second. Let me just see if the next slide is equally as bad. We can do social stigmatization through criminalization, or we could do treatment. Let me see if my next slide is equally as bad. I hope it isn't. Ah, thank you. Ha, saved. So if I think about the options that would be available under cannabis, for instance, we could regulate or restrict based on age. 18 or 19 is what we use for alcohol and tobacco. We could do degree of intoxication, which we already do for alcohol. We don't sell to intoxicated people. We could do volume rationing, which they do in the Netherlands. You can't buy more than 5 grams of cannabis. We could limit places to use, which we already do with beer and wine. It's called pubs. It's alcohol and tobacco. With tobacco, it's called people, smoky groups of people who cluster in alleyways. It's called insight for heroin and cocaine. We could do required training prior to purchase. We already do that. If you want to buy a firearm legally in this province, you have to do a 2-day training course. We could do maximum volumes for purchase and possession. We could do training of suppliers. We could do monitoring of status while driving. We could do illegal dealers pursued by enforcement. We could have retail outlets licensed and limited. We could do the appearance of the retail outlets controlled. We could tax the hell out of it, according to Larry Campbell. We could have licensing location and opening hours of consumption facilities. We could have social controls. I'm going to talk about more of those in a minute. We could do prevention programs. We could do treatment programs. We could have plain packaging, no branding. We could have warning labels. And we could have no advertising or event sponsorship. And that's just cannabis. If I think about heroin for a second, the options available to us are, is this going to work? Yes. Age, 18 or 19, cigarettes and alcohol. Degree of intoxication or intoxication. Volume rationing. We could limit the places that people could use it. We could have required training prior to purchase. We could have registration of purchasers. We could have licensing of users, which I'll talk about more in a minute. We could have tracking of consumption habits. We could have drugs consumed at location of sale. We could have prescription only. We could have maximum volumes for purchase and possession. We could have training of suppliers. We could have monitoring of use while driving. We could have illegal dealers pursued by enforcement. We could have retail outlets licensed and limited. We could have required membership in a users group. Most professions, doctors, lawyers, accountants, veterinarians, all monitor each other's behavior and, quite frankly, control each other's behavior through a process of shared responsibility. If you don't like what your doctor did to you, what you do is you complain to the College of Physicians and Surgeons. And the College of Physicians and Surgeons is partially responsible for the behavior of all doctors in this country. So we do it all the time. We do shared responsibility to control each other's behavior. That's a normal tool of social control. We could do the same with drugs. You want to buy drugs? You can. But you need to participate in a group like VANDU. And you need to work with designing best practices is how we're going to work with these substances in our society. We could have stop purchase orders. We do that for gambling. You don't want to gamble anymore? You have your name stuck in the picture at the front of a gambling establishment and you won't be allowed in. We could have previously negotiated limits, so we discuss with you in advance how much you're allowed to purchase. We could have appearance of retail outlets controlled. We could have pharmacy specialists required. We could have price and profit controls. We could tax the hell out of it. We could license the location and opening hours of consumption facilities. We could have social controls, more in a moment. We could do prevention programs, treatment available, plain packaging, concentration of products restricted and labels. We could have warning labels. We could have no advertising or event sponsorships, and we could have clean needles and health information with purchase. The bottom line is we have a lot more choices in a regulated regime than we have in a current criminalized regime. Let's look at one of those issues, drug using licenses for a second. We allow people to hurtle down the highway at high speeds in 1,000 pounds of steel. And what we do is we do a graduated car driving license program to allow people to do this murderous thing called driving cars. And we control how people learn to drive cars by controlling where people drive, when people drive, and who else is in the car initially. And eventually, if people drive without hurting anybody, they're allowed to drive wherever they want. But if they start killing people with their car, then the driver's license is taken away from them. What would happen if we did the same kind of process with drugs? We could say you could have a basic license. To get a basic license, you're allowed to purchase drugs at the age of 20. You could to get the license, you'd have to graduate from a 2-day training course, which has drug education, information on safe use, treatment information, services and recovery, and how to help others who are in trouble. To get a license, you'd have to have no criminal involvement for 2 years, and it would allow limited amounts of drugs to be purchased and used in the location of purchase. If you had a basic license for 2 years with no criminal involvement, you could get an advanced license, which would allow you to purchase drugs and take them home. And you'd lose your license if you're criminally involved or you drove while you're intoxicated. Just a thought. Now, my interest in drugs actually is a cross-cultural historical analysis. Drugs have been used we have records of drug use since before or at the beginning of recorded history of mankind. If you look at a society around the planet that has used drugs with no problems at all, they don't use everything I've just talked about. Everything I've just talked about are described as administrative controls. Traditional societies and benign relationship with drugs around the planet today and other societies don't use that. What they use is social controls. Social norms, social rituals, and sacred rituals. Drug prohibition prevents social controls from developing. So the techniques and tools that have been used since the beginning of mankind to control drug-using behavior are destroyed when we criminalize the process, because drug use becomes clandestine, and you can't engage people in the same way that you can if drug use is not criminalized. What I'm suggesting is incremental change, where we collect data, respond to the evidence, and a slow phasing in while we monitor the size of the illegal market. And we could stop the changes based on the size of the illegal market when it is as small as we'd like it to be. What we'd want to assess were crime. Crime rates should go down in the new system. Health and social problems should go down. And quite frankly, the current system that we have of drug prohibition maximizes engagement of youth. In a new system, access to youth should go down. Increments could change based on a whole number of different things. We could incrementally change drug type. Cannabis has the most popular support. I would suggest we actually start with crack cocaine because it causes the most social problems for us. We could incrementally change the preparation. We could start by introducing a weak oral solution of cocaine and slowly make it stronger as we monitor the size of the illegal market and stop when the illegal market is as small as we'd like it to be. We could use degree of intrusiveness. I've talked about a whole lot of really intrusive processes. We could change and make the process less intrusive incrementally as we monitor the size of the illegal market and change and stop when we've got it to where we want it to be. We could incrementally change location. I've got one neighborhood that I'd suggest. Cost of drugs. We could start expensive and slowly get cheaper. We could incrementally change the order delivery delay time. So you get the drugs 48 hours after you've ordered them, and then 36 hours after you've ordered them, and then 12 hours, and then 6 hours and 4 hours. So we could incrementally make the changes as we're measuring the health and social problems in our society, and we can stop when we've got it to where we want it to be. And where possible, what we'd want to move is away from administrative controls into social controls, which are the actual techniques that societies have been used since the dawning of time to control drug-using behavior. We have a massive illusion that is happening in our society, and the illusion is drug prohibition does us any good at all. It doesn't. So you have to ask, what maintains the illusion? I think it's maintained by four things: fear, ignorance, prejudice and profit. One does not discover new lands without consenting to lose sight of the shore for a long period of time. The saddest thing about life now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom. Thank you.